Let's roll. This is Sports Rage. I am Gabriel Morenci, the pips, the players, the hustlers, the people that bust them, the podcasters, and everybody else in between. Let's do this thing. A lot of stuff to break down. Countdown to kickoff is on. The National Football League Final Four. The fallout continues in Buffalo post to Sean McDermott. The New York Mets have been super aggressive over the last 48 to 72 hours. And it's funny because I don't hear people complaining and crying that the New York Mets are ruining baseball. And we've said this before, the Los Angeles Dodgers aren't ruining baseball. The New York Mets aren't ruining baseball, but it is comical to see how if the Los Angeles Dodgers signed Andy Dick to their roster, people would somehow think it's an unfair advantage. Like the Los Angeles Dodgers could go sign, like, you know, 13 homeless people on Skid Row in L.A. and somehow, oh, it's not fair. The L.A. Dodgers just signed 12 homeless people. Yet the New York Mets get, you know, they get Robert, they get Bo Bichette, and they get Freddie Peralta in a span of like a 48-hour run. Are people crying and complaining about the New York Mets destroying baseball? No. Right? It's just, oh, I guess it's just when the Dodgers sign somebody, right? Or how dare the Dodgers defer a contract? I can't believe that Kyle Tucker got a $64 million signing bonus in advance. Vladimir Guerrero got $325 million in advance. Right? Toronto Blue Jays, listen, there's something about this, too, that you see this right now. Like, there's really only a few teams that are going after these big free agents right now, right? And it's one thing to offer the money, but you've got to get creative with the contracts as well, right? Let's say you're a player. There's no salary cap in baseball, but let's say you're a player like Kyle Tucker, and you've got, like, the Mets, the Cubs, the Dodgers, and the Blue Jays, all sort of big-time franchises, and they're all sort of offering in the same ballpark, you know, maybe someone a little bit more, somebody this or that, but this is where you got to start to get creative with the deals and stuff. You know, blow them away with like a one-time payment and the structure of the deal. And the Dodgers, people complain about the Dodgers, but the Dodgers are like the best at everything, right? The Dodgers farm system was just voted the deepest and the best farm system. You can't like say, oh, they bought that. No, like they're just good at that. Like, the Dodgers have by far the most rookie of the years in baseball history. The Dodgers have always had, like, the best scouts, the best sort of development program. And a lot of the players that they develop never play for the Dodgers. The Dodgers use them as, like, stock. It's basically, all right, let's stockpile our minor league system. We'll keep a few of the guys that we think are going to be phenoms, and we'll trade off everybody else to build our roster. That's just like, that's good. That's just being a smart organization. Like, that's just a well-run organization there. But the Dodgers also have the best lawyers, best accountants, best, like, you know, sort of capologist or contract, like, specialists that understand, like, the Dodgers, like, did things that were so diabolical that the state of California, like, changed the law, basically. Like, the Dodgers were that good, right? That the Dodgers figured out, you know what? If we defer all this money for Ohtani and pay him $2 million a year, but pay him a lump sum of $700 million, he doesn't have to pay taxes on the $700 million. He'll only pay tax on the $200 million, on the $2 million he gets per year. Which is pretty crazy that they pulled it off, but it was legal. And we're not going to get like too, like, if you look into what they did, so much so that, like, you know, the governor and everybody was like, these guys just sort of like, you know, not acting in good faith. Like, they blew up a loophole in the law type of thing. Well, they were smart enough to do it. And the Kyle Tucker deal that they just did, if you get, no one reads these contracts really, like the average fan. And I'm not going to pretend I read everybody's contract, but Kyle Tucker's I was intrigued with. So, yeah, you know, I was actually looked, all right, what actually is it? And it's pretty wild. Like, you know, he got like $64 million up front, which isn't even that much in today's day and age, but he got like $64 million up front. There was a lot of little, like, deferred games that they played with it. And he's got, like, an opt-out after 2 years. He can leave. How many teams would have done that? Like, other teams would have won him locked in. No, no, you're with us. Like, the Dodgers are like, yeah, if you don't like it here, you can leave after 2 years. Right? Those are, like, little extra things that people don't realize. They cry about, like, money and all the Dodgers, but the Dodgers just know how to cut a contract. All right, this guy doesn't want this, so let's make, like, they're just smart. Like, they're great managers. Right? You know what I mean? They're like, all right, this guy likes this. This guy wants a lot of money up front. Or this guy doesn't care about getting the money up front. He wants it like this. So they really put together like the best thing for you. And they'll say, listen, if you want to defer this, you won't have to pay this. And you'll save this and that. And like, they're really good at it. And there's something that the Blue Jays have gotten good at. Like the Blue Jays, you know what I mean? Like if you look at other teams in Canada and people like think there's a perception, oh, people don't want to play in Canada or like for Canadian teams and stuff. That's not really true. NHL players don't want to play for Canadian teams. And it's ironic because they're the effing Canadian ones. But they don't want to play for Canadian teams, Canadian dudes. Because they, you know what I mean? They just don't for many different reasons. But everybody else, it's not like the Blue Jays don't have any really issues signing free agents. The Raptors... Players like the Raptors once they're there, right? When they're like, oh, man, this is actually pretty cool. And they love playing for the Raptors once they're on the Raptors. But the Blue Jays, my whole point of all this was like the Blue Jays are competing with the Yankees and all these other teams, these big teams, well, you know, for big players and stuff. And on top of it, they've got a tax situation, right, that players are getting hit with. So it's up to the Toronto Blue Jays to – sort of get creative and find creative loopholes, find different ways that have never been thought of before to pay their players. And I saw there's a hockey agent online and he was talking about this a couple of like last year, 2 years ago. And I was like, wow, I didn't know that. Right. I never realized this because everybody was saying, oh, Canadian teams, they can't compete with the Florida teams and, you know, the Florida teams and the tax breaks and blah, 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 blah. And the agent said, he goes, no, the Canadian teams are just too lazy to figure it out. And the Toronto Blue Jays did figure it out. So, like, I don't know why NHL teams are, I guess they're just dumb in the sense that the Toronto Blue Jays with the Santander deal, who really didn't do anything, and he was a bust last year, but nevertheless, it was a big signing, and he got like $36 million a year. He was concerned about paying all the taxes on it, right? He was like, I want to play for Toronto, but man, your taxes suck. What can we do about this? How do we do this? And the Blue Jays realized that in Ontario and in Canada, but specifically Ontario, work bonuses are not taxable. So basically, they paid Santander like $300 million bonus. And he's getting taxed on like $1 million a year or whatever. Like, literally. It was actually genius. Right? It's like, wow, how come nobody ever thought of that before? Like, to compensate for this, oh, you're in Canada thing. So I'm going to give credit to the Blue Jays. Like, the Blue Jays are getting, like, top tier. They're a damn good team. They have the money to give the players. Now you got to figure out how to give it to them, right? I know it sounds crazy what I'm saying. What do you mean? You got to figure out, all right, like, how do you impress them? How are you going to pay them now? And a lot of teams just don't figure it out. And then everyone else complains about it after. But the Blue Jays have. The Mets don't really need to defer things because Steve Cohen is so rich. Like, the Dodgers are rich, but Cohen's rich. Like, Steve Cohen, the guy that owns the Mets, like, he's seriously rich. In fact, I think his wealth is $21 billion. Like, think about that. I can't even add up that many zeros. Like, okay, a billion, like 100 million, you know, right? You get into like, okay, $1 billion, but then you get into $21 billion. Like, think about it. Like, if you had $21 billion, you could bet like $400 million on a football game and not even realize you lost it. You'd be like, ah, did I? It'd be like us betting like $400 on a game or something. like the amount of money that he has, he doesn't need to defer anything, right? And they haven't figured out how to attract players. Now they sort of are, but I'll wrap up my point with this is, so everybody's blaming this and blaming that. Look at the Milwaukee Brewers. They just had Peralta. They don't want to pay him. So he goes to the Mets. You got to blame the small market teams and these other owners, not the big teams. Nobody's forcing, nobody put a gun to the Boston Red Sox head and said, don't pay Mookie Betts. Is that the Dodgers' fault that they wanted to pay Mookie Betts? Is it the Dodgers' fault that they wanted to pay Freddie Freeman and the Braves didn't? Is it the Mets' fault that the Brewers had Peralta on their team, one of the best pitchers in the game, and said, nah, you know what? We don't want to pay you. You can go somewhere else. Is that their fault? You know, like, it's incredibly, the anger is incredibly misdirected amongst baseball fans. But this comes down to the fact is, for whatever reason, the common man, average Joe Sixpack, always takes the side of the billionaire's owners more than the worker, which is the player. You see it now, like in the real world even. Like, people worship Elon Musk. Like, people worship these, like, trillionaire billionaires. And like, oh, yeah, lay them off, fire them. Oh, they don't even deserve to be working. Oh, ha, ha, ha. Like, it's actually diabolical. But people have been doing this for, like, centuries. People vote against their own self-interest, right? Like, you'll vote for somebody that knows that hates you in real life. They wouldn't sit down and, like, even share a taco with you. But you think somehow, like, they represent you. It's actually, it's comical. And owners know this because they'll always blame the player. The media, oh, the player. I make $12 an hour to work here. Well, that's because you don't have any skill. This guy has skill, and that's why he's getting paid. I don't want to sound like a jerk, but that's the way it is. But, like, the athlete's always the jerk. Always the athlete's always the one that's overpaid. Meanwhile, the owner's sitting there with his mistress eating an $800 steak and drinking a $13,000 bottle of brandy and scotch while the player gets, you know, ripped on talk radio or whatever. It's people are, like, stupid. I'm just going to call it off what it is. We're in a stupid, stupid, stupid era right now of stupid, stupid, stupid people. All right, we got Cam Stewart in the house.
It was a wicked rant, Gabe. No, you're right, though. It's amazing to me. And a perfect example is the Milwaukee Brewers that you brought up. This team was really close, and you're getting rid of, like, Peralta. Like, that's the whole thing. Like, you just proved the point. The Mets can spend money. The Dodgers can spend money. Isn't it a job to try to get better, to try to do, you know, to reach an accolade, to reach a championship, to do these things? But yeah, that, and this team with the you look at their payroll, Gabe, and they're getting rid of a guy who's a wicked, wicked pitcher that can be a game changer. Instead of adding, you're subtracting. That's on them.
My deal is with these people, that all these owners that pretend that it's not fair and they're this market and all this, sell the team.
Great point.
If you can't afford to own a Major League Baseball team, you got to sell the team. It's not like a right to own a baseball team. And the people don't want to accept it, but the losing teams make more money than the winning teams do. Because the winning teams are always putting the money back in. The winning team is all, like, look at the Dodgers. The Dodgers could say, you know what? We've just won two World Series in a row. We're paying all this money to players. Why don't we just kick back for a couple of years and make a ton of money? Right? A lot of teams will do that after they won. Ah, you know what? We won. It's good. Now, you know, we raise ticket prices. Now we'll just make money. And no, like, the Dodgers basically say, ah, we won, but let's bring in Edwin Diaz. Let's give Tucker $260 million. Let's, you know what I mean? Let's reinvest the money in the band, so to speak. Right? And it's sort of like, you know, bands will do that. You know, like, you know, a good example, like Metallica coming up. Metallica, you know what I mean, would get big. You know, were getting big when they were younger and stuff. They didn't say, like, oh, wow, look, Ride the Lightning was really popular, man. And wow, we just all made a couple of million dollars off of this. I'm going to go buy a house now. And you know what? I'm set for life. No. I guess, you know, I'll put it in other terms, like a drug dealer, right? No, like they're not keeping the money. They're just like, they constantly just keep getting more. Like, it's like, you know what I mean? No, I started off with like a 2 keys and now I'm at 10 keys. And like, I'm going to keep flipping this thing. And, you know, you're building the equity of your company, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Like bands will do that. It's like, yeah, we invested in the record. We invested in the stage. We're going to go on tour. Other bands will say, just give me my effing check, man. I want my money and I'm going to go buy a Lamborghini. I don't care about, like, you know, no, I don't want to put the money back in. Like, we'll do a new record. It's sort of like, you know, betting can be the same way. Some people want to bet and build it up. Others, you know, want to, you know, just sort of get the big score and whatnot. But, yeah, so baseball, whatever, and you see this week people are bitching about, oh, there's going to be a lockout and there's going to be – they want a salary cap and stuff. There won't be, because just point blank, all these owners, like the Brewers and the Pirates and the Tigers and all these guys, they're all billionaires, but they won't want to spend money. So if there's a salary cap, that means there's going to be a salary floor. And they're throwing around like numbers like $150 to $170 million. There's no way in hell. No way in hell. Do you really, anybody out there? That's why, like, yeah, people say, like, you know, like, use your head, people. There's all these, like, people in the media, oh, there's definitely going to be a lockout because of a salary cap. Like, who's going to fight? Who's fighting for a salary cap? The Dodgers don't want a salary cap. The Mets don't want a salary cap. Like, all the big teams don't care about a salary. They don't want a salary cap. And the small teams don't want a salary cap. So who wants the salary cap exactly? Like, if there's the small teams, like, if you're the Marlins, you're the Pirates. The Pirates spent like $60, $70 million on players, guys, like whatever, $90 million. You think they want to be forced to spend double that and cut into their profit? They're going to be like, no way. Like, I'm not spending $180 million. Because the whole thing is, they'll never win anyway. Salary caps don't help you win anyways. So, like, they won't win anyways, and they'll have to spend the money. The Marlins, they'll say, oh, we can't afford to do it. Like, they won't do it, like, just point blank. They just simply will not do it. So, I don't know. Maybe there's, like, you know, 5 or 7 owners or something right in the middle in the sweet spot that, like, the Seattles of the world and stuff that sort of like to spend money but don't want to spend too much, that would like a cap world. But there's not enough of them. And in baseball with all this stuff, like, you got to have, like, an over majority of the owners to agree on things. And the owners won't agree. The big-time owners are going to be on one side of the room telling the other guys to suck it up and sell the team if you're not rich enough to, you know. It's a big boy league. It's the thing with baseball. It's like you don't see this like with the what's the name of that? What's the name of the big boat race every year? The yachts. With the,
what,
yachts.
The America's Cup?
Yeah, good call. The America's Cup. Thanks. Good call, Cam. The America's Cup. You don't see some, like, redneck with a little fishing boat at the America's Cup complaining that it's not fair.
get a better boat.
It's not fair. I'm going up against the Sheik and the Saudis here, and they got this big, like, you know, they got a $300 million rig here. No, it's like, no, well, this is for rich people. It's like the Kentucky Derby. You're not allowed to show up with a dog. It's like, no, you're not rich enough. Like, I know, you know, it's not your right to say, like, that's what I don't get with these baseball owners. Like, oh. No, it's not your right to own a baseball team, make $200 million a year. Like, if you can't keep up, maybe you're not rich enough to own the team. Like, you know what I mean? I just caught up with this. And it's funny because you call their bluff and you tell them this because they all cry, oh, this is so hard. We don't know. It's like, all right, sell the team. We'll buy the team from you right now. They never want to sell the team, though, after. Right? They never want to sell the team because they're full of it. They're making so much money. You know, like, people are talking about Steve Cohen and the Mets. Cohen puts in, he puts back like 95% of the money. Basically, all the money that comes in to the Mets, he does not keep. Now, it's a little deceptive because he's so rich, he doesn't need the money. So, but like Steve Cohen does not make a cent from the New York Mets. Like all money that comes in, he puts back in. Right, like he signs players, he puts back in. It was nuts. It was like 86, whatever. It was like,
that's crazy.
You can't do 100% because there's only so many players you can sign. Right, it's like the LA Dodgers. Like, how much more money can they spend? Like, they're sort of maxed out as it is now. Like, there's not the run out of players to sign, so to speak. The Dodgers was the same thing. The Dodgers was very high. Dodgers was like 75%. So think about that, Cam. Like, the Dodgers basically are only keeping 25% of the money that comes in. And there's a lot of money coming in. So they could easily say, you know, we don't need to spend this much money, right? We're already good. We're already this. And like, and the Dodgers revenue is like $720 million a year. I think it's 710. It's in that range. It's that's a lot of money. I get it. Like, the Dodgers bring in like 700 a year. That's just what out like a lot of sponsors and stuff like that. Cause I saw Craig Carton was ripping the Yankees. Cause the Yankees sort of cry for a little bit now. Well, you know, it's tough to, you know, and this and that. And like, Carton had the number. It was the Yankees and the Dodgers had the same revenue essentially. So you think about that. Everyone hates the Dodgers so much. The Yankees bring in $700 million as well. But the Blue Jays are very aggressive too. They're another one, though. They don't need the money, right? Rogers owns the Blue Jays. They're not really doing the Blue Jays to make money. It's sort of a bigger picture thing. And so, but the Blue Jays are all in. But there won't be a salary cap. That's just that's just not happening. All right. What is happening is the National Football League Final Four. And for me, I guess, Cam, I sort of feel like you do every year in the Stanley Cup playoffs after the Leafs get eliminated, in which you don't really want to watch anymore. It's like, yeah, you're watching because of bets. I feel the same way about like the Buffalo Bills. Once the Bills get eliminated from the playoffs, I lose my passion for the NFL. I do. Like, I'll watch the games this week and stuff, but, like, you know what I mean? But I'm not like, oh, yeah, it's the NFL final. Like, if it was the Buffalo Bills playing the Final Four, I'd be like, oh, my God, every day I've been talking about it all the time. Yep. Now it's just, yeah, whatever, dude. We got a big circus going on with our coaching staff and blah, blah, and press conferences. But your Seattle Seahawks are playing, and it is against the Rams, so that's pretty cool. But to be honest with you guys, the thing is, nobody really cares about Seattle and the Rams game in a weird way, even though it's a good game and it's a big, you know, it's people, whatever. Seattle are in the Pacific Northwest. They're not really, you know what I mean? Nobody knows them. Nobody really likes them besides Seahawk fans. The Rams kind of just annoy people. And then you get Denver and New England, which is just so like, ugh. You know, it's the one and the two seed, but unless you're a Bronco fan or a Patriot fan, it seems to me it's hard to get excited about this week, but the Seahawk game and the Ram game is a super cool matchup. And Mo Khan brought this up like a month ago. I tweeted it, whatever. It's been online. It's been popping around everywhere. And there's always going to be these weird little sort of, you know, storylines that don't always come into play, but this one actually is getting pretty close. That this is unbelievable. Every time there's a new Pope elected, the Seahawks go to the Super Bowl.
It's true. It's just...
So in 2005, there was a new Pope elected. The Seahawks lost in the Super Bowl to the
Steelers,
to the Pittsburgh Steelers. 2013, there was a new Pope elected. The Seahawks won the Super Bowl against the Denver Broncos. Now we got a 2025 new Pope elected, and they're one game away from making the Super Bowl. So they don't always win the Super Bowl when there's a new Pope elected, but they get to the Super Bowl.
The Pope angle.
Yeah, and it's funny it's because I lost with the Denver Broncos in that game against the Seattle Seahawks due to the fact that it was year of the horse. And I actually believe, literally and figuratively, I bet the Broncos like in advance. Like, I had a Bronco future. I was in Vegas and I bought into that type of stuff. Yeah, I was, you know, you live in Vegas, you hang around enough Asian people in casinos, yes. They start to rub off on you and stuff.
Yes, they do.
So I was like, oh, I knew all about like the year of this and the year of that and what, you know, lucky this and that and stuff. And I kind of threw it out there. I was like, man's year of the horse. And I was sort of like, Colts, Broncos. And I was like, wow, nah, not the Colts. I was like, the Colts weren't very good. I was like, the Broncos. So I sort of like, I was boxed in a little bit on the Broncos already, but I actually thought they were going to win with Peyton Manning and stuff. I was like, yeah, they'll win. And that was the game where there was a safety on the first play of the game. The ball sailed over his head. That one was in New York, actually. Nice weather. It was at MetLife Stadium, and Seattle won. So history's on your side, Cam, as far as getting to the Super Bowl is concerned. Doesn't mean that they'll win, but with the new Pope, who incidentally is a Bears fan for the record.
Exactly. He loves Chicago sports. But I'm going to say, yeah, that Super Bowl versus Denver, too, that was an absolute ass-kicking. Like, it was almost surreal for me to watch it, Gabe. I'm like, is this happening? Like, they're not just winning. They're killing Denver. Yeah, and it was in New York. This is the thing. The Rams, for the first time, they have a game with not crazy weather. It's, you know, Stafford. You brought up the point. You said that they didn't sack Stafford in 3 years, you said?
Seattle have not sacked Matt Stafford since 2023.
That is such a shocking stat. I'm like, whoa, I don't even like, I can't even comprehend that. But
that's why
thing.
They lose to them most of the time. Yes. Because the thing with Stafford is there's a lot of Stafford's hard to deal with. And because if you don't get pressure on him, he's just going to pick you apart. Right. He's one of these old school gunslinger types. Yet if you blitz him, he'll murder you. Like Matthew Stafford is literally like the best ever in NFL history type of stuff against the blitz. He can read it. He's been around long enough. So he sees, he's like, oh yeah, you're going to blitz me, huh? He knows, all right, I'm going to get rid of the ball quickly here on the other side. Like he knows which side of the field to go to. He knows like how to, so like, you've got to play good, you know, defense in the secondary. You can confuse him a little bit. Like, you know what I mean? With different packages, you got to mix it up with them, but it sounds like it's like hypocritical. You can't get too much, you know, you can't blitz, but you got to get pressure. You got to get just normal pressure without blitzing on him. If you can get like, you know, the pressure with the 3 and 4 man fronts and stuff and just sort of get him out of the pocket a bit, then you can get successful. But they haven't had, they've been unable to do it. Like they literally have not sacked him since 2023. And the thing that concerns me too, Cam, is like I said yesterday, the Rams have just played in bad weather for a couple of games in a row. That Carolina game, that was bad weather for real. Like, it wasn't cold, but, man, that was some serious North Carolina, like, tornado rain type
wind,
stuff.
Like, yeah, wind rain. That's bad.
Like, it was rainy and windy, and that was rough. And they got through it. They still ended up scoring 30 or whatever the hell it was, but they got through it. Last week, they played in one of the coldest games in Chicago Bear history. They found a way to get through it. Now, they're back in their comfort zone. They're back. They're playing a team in their division. I've done the LA-Seattle flight. You know, it's like an hour and a half. It's a little longer than you would think, but it's like an hour and a half, hour 45-minute type of deal. But they play in Seattle all the time. It's not cold in Seattle. The weather on Sunday actually is going to be very seasonable. Like, it's going to be plus weather. It's not even going to be freezing. It's not freezing. And it won't be raining either, actually. It always rains in the Pacific Northwest. But it's not even going to be raining for this game. And in fact, it's supposed to be sunny, which I'm not a massive fan of. I know the Rams are happy about this. They said, at least we're not going to be playing in the cold weather again. And, you know, between this game and then they're playing in San Francisco if they win the Super Bowl after. And I was thinking about that, Cam. If you're the Niners, it's got to really eat you alive. Either way, it's going to be a team that you hate. The Rams or the 49ers are going to be in your stadium playing in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's going to suck. The Niners, they were so beat up that in that game. And you're going to see either the Seahawks or Rams there. Gabe, it's the third time, too. And that's really concerning as a Seahawks fan because the Rams have veterans. Puka Nacua absolutely destroyed them, over 200 yards receiving in that game. You said it. Like, Stafford, even in that weather in Chicago, you saw some of the throws he made, some ropes. The Bears played really good. Brisker had one of his best games ever, but they still found a way. Here's the thing for Seattle. We know that Charbonnet's out. Walker's been absolutely huge in that Niner game. What are they going to do against their pressure? Pressure, screen passes, Walker receiving. Shahid, who took back the opening kick, speed, kills. He's going to be a guy, Gabe. Honestly, I see some props out there, like 1.5 yards rushing. I think Shaheed's going to be a big part of this thing. End arounds, quick hitches, a lot of that stuff. We'll see what happens here. The defense needs to step up again. They did it against the Niners. The Rams have so many damn weapons, too. Two good tight ends. Higbee's back in the mix. Parkinson's been great. It's a real concern. And the Rams know Seattle inside out, and Seattle needed a crazy comeback to beat them last time. Very concerned. Wish it was the Bears on the road in Seattle, but it's the Rams. I still think Seattle could win this game. It's not going to be easy, Gabe. You know they don't pop a three up there. People would be betting their houses on the Rams if they were getting +3 against Seattle. I'm going to be honest with you, buddy. I'm jacked about the game, but I'm concerned as hell because the Rams survived Carolina. They survived Chicago. And I think they're pretty confident heading into this game.
Yeah, I've got my doubts as well. Listen, I like San Francisco to cover. I thought Seattle would win, but I thought San Francisco would cover the spread last week. Everything was just almost too easy for Seattle. This is not going to be too easy. This is going to be a completely different game, man. Stopping Nacua, man, that's just the issue for me. The guy is just unstoppable. And you know, he's going to have like 12 catches or whatever. Like anytime they need a catch, they can get it with this guy. Devontae Adams isn't really himself. And, you know, but Seattle, if they just play smash mouth football, man, can't give the ball to Kenneth Walker like 17, 18 times. Mm-hmm. Hope that he pops a few big ones. Quick hits with Darnold. Don't throw the ball deep. Just sort of quick hit. Control the clock. But Seattle, this is going to be a challenge for Seattle. Losing Zach Charbonnet does not help their cause either. It's going to be a challenge for them. I'm pulling for them. You know, the Rams have had their success. I like the Rams, too. I'm not, you know what I mean? I've always had a soft spot in my heart for the Rams, but I'm not a Rams fan, per se. But, you know, I think the Dodgers have given L.A. enough success.
City of Champions. Little. No, that's the whole thing, Gabe, too. Like, you're looking at the Rams. They have so many ways to beat you. And even with the run game, too, with Williams, the question is, okay, now that Charbonnet's out, the backup, they've been talking about Cam Akers bringing out the former Ram from the practice squad. Helani might be the guy. He's off IR because it just can't be Walker. That's the whole thing. McVay and his coaching staff are smart, so they're going to come up with schemes. Walker in open space is the danger that the Rams will, like, if he can get open space and just turn. Gabe, you see how strong he is. He just burns guys. He's fast. He's powerful. They just have to come up with concepts because the Rams, they have Nacua. Exactly what you said. They will find a way to get him the ball. Seattle has to have creative concepts to get other guys involved. And I think would not be surprised if we had some trick plays in this game. They're going to open up everything.
And they also have Blake Corum and Ed Williams.
Yep.
And Devontae Adams and Jared Verse. It's going to be tough. Like it's hard not to like the Rams in a teaser, actually. Because if the Rams lose, they won't get smashed like San Francisco. That was just kind of an anomaly. All right, let's bring in Big Card Julio. Julio, the Denver Broncos. Good news, bad news for the Broncos. Yeah, I don't know. So you can almost argue it was like football justice. And I never cheer for anybody to get injured, but Denver are lucky to be playing in this game. That was one of the worst calls in NFL history. And it's funny, I'm not using it as an excuse for the Buffalo Bills because the Bills would have found a way to screw something up like down the line and not win the Super Bowl. But Denver were freaking lucky. Cooks caught the ball. They shouldn't even be playing right now. So then they lose their quarterback. So it's like a lot of people said after, well, you know, that was almost like the poetic justice of the football gods. You got thrown a game you didn't deserve to win, but you lose your quarterback. But with that being stated, and it's funny, I realize now, guys, and I sort of catch on about how little kind of people know, right? I mean, Chris Russo, Mad Dog. He doesn't even know who Jared Stidham is. He called him Stickum yesterday. Who? Stickum.
Stickum.
Yeah, he doesn't know who
the
he is.
The stuff on your hands.
I brought up the other day Jared Stidham's background and pedigree, and everybody kind of just stared blankly at me and stuff. But I've been betting college football, and I've been following this stuff and, like, recruiting and all this, like, my entire life, man. And I was a massive fan of Stidham at Baylor. Like, Stidham, people, like, a lot of people are like, oh, Stidham this, Stidham that, who's Jared Stidham? Jared Stidham was a four-star recruit. So number one, four-star recruit. He was ranked as the sixth best dual threat quarterback in his class. He originally committed to play at Texas Tech, but he changed his mind and he went to Baylor. He was the backup. He started off the season as the backup to Seth Russell, who's actually pretty good too, Seth Russell. But, dude, he was a badass. Jared Stidham was a freaking badass at Baylor. All right? And so much so, I was like, this guy's going to be like NFL big type thing. Like, this kid is good, good. Yet, if you guys remember, there was a big controversy at Baylor. So, Art Briles was the coach. Stidham got an ankle injury. And then he was out for the rest of the year. And then there was a big sexual abuse scandal at Baylor, which Stidham had nothing to do with. But Stidham left after. Like, once there was a big scandal, he left. He went to Auburn. Guy was the MVP in the Music City Bowl. 63-14 win over Purdue. Gets drafted by Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots. Now, that's where I'm going with this is. So, the kid was like a high school pedigree star type thing. Four-star recruit. Big-time college football quarterback. Gets drafted by the New England Patriots, who have Tom Brady. Belichick and McDaniels thought highly enough of them that, yeah, you know what? This will be the backup quarterback to Tom Brady. After that, Josh McDaniels gets the head coaching job in Las Vegas. He wants Jared Stidham to be his starting quarterback. Right? He's like, yeah, I want – they benched like Derek Carr for Jared Stidham. And now – he is on the Denver Broncos with Sean Payton. You notice a pattern here? Smart, legendary football coaches and teams are like, yeah, we want this guy on our team. And earlier this year, and I know you follow the Broncos, Julio, in training camp this year, Bo Nix was really struggling, right? Bo Nix frustrated people last year. And then, so Bo Nix was really struggling in camp this year. There was reports he was getting into it with Sean Payton a lot, and Payton was frustrated with him, and everybody said the same thing. I'll tell you what, Jared Stidham looks like the better quarterback in camp, but it's Bo Nix's job because they drafted him. I'm like the only person all week that had been telling people this, Julio. There is not a big drop-off between Bo Nix and Jared Stidham, and people are about to find this out. Jared Stidham was an elite quarterback. Like, this kid is not, it's not Skylar Thompson. You're not pulling like, oh, you know what? He was kind of this or that. And no, we're talking about a blue chip recruit that played at Baylor, played at Auburn, was a backup to Tom Brady in the freaking New England Patriots. You don't think he's learned a few things? And you think Sean Payton with a young quarterback like Bo Nix would have Jared Stidham if he didn't trust him? If Sean Payton trusts him and Belichick trusts him, I trust him. I'm taking the Broncos, Julio.
I love it, Gabe. Gabe and Camp, hope you guys are doing well. I'm with you, my friend. Broncos plus 4.5, under 42.5. If you like the Broncos, you have to imagine they're going to play a big time of possession type of game, run the football, 8, 10, 12 play type of drives. They have the advantage, A, of being in Denver at Mile High with the altitude. Weather's going to be pretty nasty with a nasty cold spell coming through. So I like the conditions. And as you mentioned with Sean Payton, I think he feels more comfortable with a game plan situated around a good defense and utilizing a guy like Stidham to his best of his abilities, not needing him to do too much with the football, just some nice dump-off passes, some nice 7-8 yard type of passes, convert on third and medium, third and four or five type situations. I like the Broncos, Gabe. I like them and the Rams in a teaser as well. And I'm going outright to shop around for the best number, but right now I'm finding 2-1 for the Broncos to win outright at Mile High.
I think a way to approach this is if you do believe that the Broncos can win this game outright, you can get the Denver Broncos to win the Super Bowl at plus 1,200 right now.
Good price.
So you take the Denver Broncos at plus 1200, Julio, if you think they're going to win this game, and then boom, you've got the Broncos at plus 1200 in a one game setting in the Super Bowl in 2-3 weeks, what, 2.5 weeks. And you can, I'm not a big fan of hedging, but you would have a situation, you know what I mean? At least where you'd be in a nice spot with a 12-1 in your back pocket. For the record, they'd be a big underdog against either team. It's like 8.5 type of deal. Like the Broncos would be 8.5 point Super Bowl odds. The LA Rams would be 8.5 point favorites over the Denver Broncos. And the Seattle Seahawks would be 8.5 point favorites over the Denver Broncos.
Seems a little bit rich. Like those look at lines. It's like, whoa, 8.5. But the thing about Stidham is and you talk to a lot of different people, Gabe, just to add to your point, people call him like a second quarterback's coach that you talk about. No, and he's also made big throws before. Obviously, Sean Payton went out of his way. He wanted him to be the backup to Bo Nix. He believes in this guy. So that's the whole thing. I don't think people understand that Stidham is decent. And when you have a coach of Peyton's ilk, this guy knows business. And I'm going to tell you, they're going to have a game plan set up for him. And this line is way out of whack. Is Bo Nix worth 7 damn points? Like, how many points is this guy worth? You can get Denver. They had it up to 5.5. I think it's ridiculous. I think Denver could win this game. I'm definitely taking the points. And people are sleeping on Stidham. You are right.
Bet365 isn't moving. They've got 4.5.
They're sharp.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I keep hearing about all these other numbers and stuff, but I keep seeing 4.5 there. Rams getting 2.5, and I do agree, Julio, I brought it up earlier. The Rams-Seahawks game, kind of a toss-up. I mean, you can make a strong argument for either team. I think you can kind of make a stronger case for the Rams. But Seattle are the real deal. So I've underestimated Seattle a bit at times. So I don't want to underestimate Seattle, but I just kind of feel that whatever happens, it's not going to be like the San Francisco game. Like, Seattle aren't beating the Rams 41-7. Like, the Rams have healthy bodies and stuff. They're not the Niners. It's different. So if they lose, like, it'll be a close game. So you're getting 9.5 on a teaser. And may get 11.5, 12.5 for the Broncos. That's a nice teaser. Hard to resist right there between the two of them. But those are the Super Bowl odds. And the Rams would be – the Rams are favored as well. Like, NFC is heavily favored to win the Super Bowl right now. The Rams would be 3.5 point favorites against the New England Patriots. And the Rams would be 8.5 points against the Denver Broncos, as we talked about. So the different scenario, Seattle and New England, that would be Seattle, New England, LA, and New England. Those are sort of the two competitive Super Bowls that we could have. So what's your Super Bowl prediction going to be, Julio? Who's playing in the Super Bowl?
It's going to be the L.A. Rams, Stan Kroenke against his in-laws or his family mates. Stan Kroenke against the Walmarts, Rams, Broncos.
Nice to see the little guy succeed, huh?
Exactly. Are you kidding me?
You know, I don't know if you saw this, Julio, but Stan Kroenke was just named the largest landed homeowner in the United States.
Well, he could thank his wife for that. He was just a small, he was like a medium realtor owner in Missouri. He marries into the Walmart family, and now he has that title. So good for Stan.
Good for Stan.
That was almost my point off the top of the show.
Yeah.
When people hate the Dodgers and stuff, it's like, yeah. Like, you got the Walmart family owning teams. Like, yeah, the Dodgers is a big evil empire. I know.
Exactly. Right? Like, it's Dodgers. Like, take a look at the other guys. It's like, what?
Other people. Yeah, no. Like, they're just largest landowners, gazillionaire, and all this type of
ridiculous
stuff. It's like, yeah, whatever, dude. Yeah. That's what sports has become, man. A playground for the gazillionaires. Except college basketball, which is its own world right now. So we'll wrap it up with this. And I know Julio follows college basketball and the lower tier conferences and the under the radar conferences. But I can't recall, guys, a year. This is the best year in college basketball in a long time, in which you know, sometimes the quality of play isn't very good, and it's boring, or there's not very many good teams, or you know who's going to win. You know, the players, they all go to the NBA so quickly. This year just has a different feel to it. Like, I don't know, man. I guess there's just so many damn basketball players now that every team is just stacked. But you've got, like, some really, really, really good teams that all legitimately have a chance to win the NCAA tournament. But forget about the NCAA tournament. Let's get into the really, really good teams that make money for people. The best team against the spread in the country, Mercer.
Yes.
Mercer, 15-2 against the spread. Portland State, 10-2-1 against the spread. Stephen F. Austin, 14-3 against the spread. Sam Houston State, 13-3. Miami, Ohio. Man, Miami, Ohio, 20-0 straight up, but 13-4 against the spread. They played a couple of non-line games. DePaul.
DePaul's back, baby.
DePaul's back, yes.
DePaul. As a kid, Mark Aguirre, give me DePaul. Blue Demons.
I don't know if they're back, but they're covering numbers. They don't suck.
They don't suck.
13-5. Yeah, they don't suck. 13-5 ATS. Eastern Michigan, 13-5.
Look at these schools.
Florida Atlantic, 13-5. Hofstra, 12-5. Virginia, 11-5. 11-5-2. Long Beach, 11-5-1. William and Mary, 11-5. And, you know, we can go through them all, but I land on another team here. The Denver Pioneers.
Yes.
11-5-1 against the spread, yet the Denver Pioneers. So you want to make money, you bet Denver to cover, and you bet the over. They are now 16-1 to the over on the season. I guess it's debatable because there's whether there's a push or not.
That's still insane.
I would call it 17-1, to be honest. Hold on, 16-17. 16-1. I see a 15-1-1 here, and it's wrong. I don't know. I guess one of them, depending on what you want to call it, a push or not. But I got them at 16-1 to the over, Julio. And they're actually playing tonight.
I love it, Gabe. Yeah, I mean, I don't care for some of the bigger programs. I care for the schools that could help us make money over the grind of the season. And that's a great list. And Denver, they're improving. But like you said, they're an offensive. They play up and down. They have a new coach, so they really want to play more of a tempo-style game. I believe they're taking on North Dakota State tonight. 159's the total. You know, luck needs to be on our side. Let's go Pios plus 4.5 over 159.5. We need a good first half to get that number past the finish line, but I like it.
Denver, the number one over team in the country. Kent State are the second at 13-4. The MAC is a high-scoring conference this year. Kent State and Miami, Ohio, they can get after it. Toledo can too. Kent State, 13-4 to the over. Miami, Ohio, 13-4 to the over. Also 13-4 against the spread, as we talked about. Elon, not Musk, but Elon University, 13-4. They're a good over team. UL Monroe, 13-4 to the over. Long Beach, 12-4-1 to the over. The Utah Utes are 14-5 to the over. New Orleans, 14-5. Providence, 14-5. And then if you look at the best under teams, Hawaii, 12-3 to the under. Cincinnati, 15-4 to the under. UT Arlington, 13-4 to the under. Fordham, 13-4 to the under. Pepperdine, 14-5. Pepperdine cost me money last night. I took Gonzaga. And I've been betting against Gonzaga a lot this year, guys. I've been taking, like, the big dogs. Like, yeah, give me Seattle plus 26.5. Give me whatever, plus 28. Last night, I didn't think. I felt like, nah, this feels like an old-school Gonzaga beatdown game. I laid 28.5, and, man, they were up by, like, 30 all second half, and they ended up, like, only winning by 24. So we got backdoored there, so. Yeah, there's some of the most successful college basketball.
It's amazing,
trends.
Gabe. When you look at it, like, look at the schools. To Julio's point, Mercer, Portland State, Stephen F. Austin, Sam Houston, Miami, Ohio. Like, you know what I mean? So the biggest school, like Virginia. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's a lot of these smaller schools. So good point by you guys. You know, just covering the board and not just betting the big conferences.
They adjust the total. They adjust the numbers. They don't really adjust the numbers with these small schools.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Michigan Wolverines, man, they adjust like every game. Like they're on it.
They're sharp.
Like the Michigan, like they're so sharp. Michigan the other night, we're laying 15 and a half. They won by 14.
Yeah.
Their team total was 89 and a half. They got to 86. Like they know people bet Michigan and Duke. Nobody's betting on a Hofstra game and stuff. Just the hardcore degenerates that are on top of these things are. So they're a little slower to adjust. It's like NHL hockey.
Well, take a look at this.
NBA props, man, they adjust like after one game. NHL, they don't adjust like for 3 months. They just don't care. Like nobody bets it. Yeah. There's not enough people betting on an NHL prop for them to notice or care.
Portland State's in action tonight. Second best team against the spread in the country.
You think they're going to cover
again? Portland State's 3.5 on the road tonight. Yeah, you just ride the wave. Keep riding the wave.
I bet against them in the last game, actually. I bet against Portland State. I got 3 with Northern Colorado, and it was a push, believe it or not. Like, it actually ended up as a push. You know, one thing I will say, like they do adjust. They've caught up a little bit. So that's my whole thing with Portland State, because the hipsters are betting them, and the you know, the people like the hardcore degenerates have caught on and realized. And speaking of trends and stuff, man, Eastern Washington, these guys are another team that can get after it. I'm surprised here. I'm looking at the top over unders here. Where the hell are Eastern Washington? I'm surprised they're not higher here. Eastern Washington play like track meets as well. I think Eastern Washington might be live tonight, Julio, in that game, actually. I'm going to go contrarian.
It's going to be the game we'll be watching. I look forward to it, Gabe.
Well, no, game's under the radar, Gabe. Look at UNC Wilmington, the Seahawks. They're 17-2, and William and Mary, you guys talked about 12-6. They're... To Gabe's point earlier, like I remember when I came on with you and Wetzel, there's so many damn good teams like Miami of Ohio, St. Louis, the Billikens. Like it's weird this year. Like there's a lot of good, good teams. It's crazy. It's wild.
Nebraska are still undefeated.
Yeah, Nebraska. Yeah. Oh, what was that number last night, Gabe? 10.5? Oh, they win by 10.
It's interesting. You mentioned that, guys. There's a prop on the score bet. You guys are familiar with the score back in Canada. They took over for ESPN. Miami of Ohio, 10-1 to finish the regular season undefeated. I think Nebraska were 16-1.
That's not
Arizona, 14-1. So
it's almost impossible to go undefeated.
Miami, Ohio are going to get knocked off soon. Their last game went to overtime, 105-102. I was on Kent State, actually, so I paid the price for going against them. So we'll wrap it up with, speaking of college basketball, I'll be in San Francisco for a couple of days, not the entire week. We'll be there from like Tuesday night through to Saturday, you know, Media Row, Super Bowl, all that type of stuff. And but one thing I'm actually most looking forward to is I'm going to go to a San Francisco Dons game.
Yeah.
Nice.
The San Francisco Dons host Loyola Marymount.
Cool.
And it's funny because the Golden State Warriors are playing the same week. And, you know, anytime the Super Bowl, there's always usually an NBA game in the city of the Super Bowl and stuff. And it's always like a big deal and a big ticket. And oh, everybody wants to go to the game and stuff. And I don't care. Like, I have zero interest in going to the Golden State Warrior Philadelphia 76ers game. And the first thing I did was look up San Francisco Dons. And I was like, please, come on, have a home game. Have a home game. And they do. And there seems like the arena actually is like pretty much like, I don't know, like by the Golden Gate Bridge or whatever. Like it's
nice.
It's not in the middle of nowhere type thing. Like I looked it up from like the hotel and it was like, whatever, dude, like an 8 minute drive or 10 minute That's drive awesome. Type thing. 30 minute walk. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I like, you know, I like sort of unique things. Mm-hmm. There's a few like sort of gyms. Bill Russell, of course, played there, right? They were the national champions. So, you know, you got that old history there. I like to sort of, you know, soak that up. There's a few of them. The Hofstra one, too, the gym, the oldest gym in America now. Like I said, there's a few historic places I wouldn't mind checking out before I'm said and done. So as long as I got an opportunity, I'd actually like to go to a Loyola Marymount game too in L.A. There's another one that's always been on my bucket list. Long Beach, too. I've never been to that pyramid. I like to, you know, like I said, there's a bunch of these sort of just Cleveland State's another one that I don't think I'll ever get to because I don't know. I'll never have a reason to be Cleveland
State versus Wright State. That's the dream.
Yeah, yeah. I've always, like I said, I've always wanted to go to a Cleveland State game and just get hammered.
Awesome. Go to Northfield. Yeah.
Yeah, get hammered at a Cleveland State basketball game. But enjoy the games, Julio. We'll see you, Cam.
Yep.
Rob Good Vino luck. Will step up in, with us tomorrow. And tomorrow we'll have some AVN award props for you. I already put them in, actually. Bet Online has it, the AVN XXX award show. And I got to love the irony. You got to love the irony of this. So the AVN awards are going on. And it's being held at the Virgin Hotel.
The best.
It's no irony there.
No, none.
No irony there. The Virgin, the Virgin Hotel chain. The Virgin used to be the Hard Rock. No one goes to this place. That's why it's there. Like the Virgin, nobody goes there. So like they're trying to get something like. It's such a bad location, that place, and the place is empty all the time. It's a really nice hotel, too. Like, as far as, like, the pool, and, like, it's upscale, and it's nice and stuff, but people don't like it because there's, like, crackheads and homeless people on the corner. Like, you're not on the strip. You're sort of, like, there's, like, a gas station and, like, a liquor store across the street. It's on like Paradise Boulevard, which is kind of a shady street. And so people can't walk around. Like, but I will throw it out there. Like, if you're going to Vegas and you don't care that the place is dead, like a lot of people want like atmosphere and stuff. But like, I think it's pretty cool, actually. You get a nice, nice pool by yourself and stuff and all that. Yeah, you know,
I like those places, Gabe. I like it when it's dead and crappy.
Yeah, that's why I like the new Sahara, actually. Yes, it's like all nice, but that's our joint. Empty.
Exactly. I love those places.
I like it. It's kind of empty. Fontainebleau. Well, to be honest, they're all empty.
Yeah.
And in fact, they're so empty, I saw Circa is offering, you'll like this, Cam, they're offering.
The Canadian at Par gig? Yeah.
Canadian at Par, yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. Got to hand it to Derek Stevens, Gabe. He's one guy that steps up. He's like, we're not seeing the Canadians. I'm going to do something about it. Shout out to him.
Yeah. He also, though... he also brought Donald Trump onto the floor of Circa raising his arm in victory before.
Oh. Yeah, so like, sorry about that. I just like Canadian that part.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying. So, like, I love the irony. No irony here at all. But okay, he was practically begging in the video. He goes, "We want Canadians. We need Canadians to come back." Like, Vegas is in big ass trouble. Yeah. Like,
they've got a greedy. Whole Canadian bar, right? At Circa.
Bar Canada.
He's always been, like they do. He's always been very like pro-Canadian, Stevens. Like he said, he grew up in Windsor, right? He goes, man, my backyard was like basically, you know, he grew up in like on the Michigan side of the border.
Yep.
Derek's a good guy, right? He's a good guy. But, you know, we'll see, man. We'll wrap it up with this, but I didn't really want to get into it. But like, I don't think it'll get to that yet. There's some countries talking about boycotting the World Cup now. Just for the record,
exactly.
Like, and big ones too, right? Like England, Germany, they're sort of kicking the tires on a little bit about, you know what? It's an extreme measure. They don't want to do it, but I don't think they will yet. It's going to be a circus. We'll put it that way. Julio, Cam, thanks to everybody for tuning in. Other than that, you're on your own. Later.